for a long time, I felt like I'd taken a lot of wrong turns or false starts. I spent a lot of time trying to figure out, I guess, what I wanted to do for the rest of my life.
Hello and welcome to the Brand My Career podcast. I'm your host, Alex Cutterford, and I'm so glad you're joining me today. My goal is to help you take ownership of your career, find your people through personal branding and networking, and take career-enhancing action. Managing your life and career can be hard. That's why every fortnight I'll be releasing an episode where I interview a diverse range of guests that will help you find clarity and build confidence in your career. Let's get into it.
I'm joined by Joe McKay. So Joe is a LinkedIn ghostwriter, and he's going to be chatting to us all things LinkedIn today, as well as hearing about a bit of his career journey, how he's gotten to where he is, and the twists and turns that he might have taken along the way. So thanks for joining us, Joe.
Thanks for having me, Alex. Really good to be here.
Yeah, really excited to get into the chat. So keen to first start with a bit of maybe an overview of your career and hearing about some of the different jobs and work that you've done leading up to what you're now doing.
Yeah, well, it feels like a pretty long story for me, and I think hopefully some people in the audience will kind of understand the perspective that I have, which is for a long time I felt like I'd taken a lot of wrong turns or false starts. I spent a lot of time trying to figure out, I guess, what I wanted to do for the rest of my life. And over the years, that's ranged from starting out in an internship and a grad program with a government organization in New South Wales. That really wasn't for me at that time, so spent some time overseas playing sport, playing cricket, a sport that I love, to then coming back to try my hand in management consulting and do something completely different again, to then again being kind of scared out of that and not quite ready for a sort of a traditional office sit-down job. So moving back overseas and really at that point, was probably the first time in my career, I was probably 23, 24, I actually felt like I had a clear goal, and that was to become a sports agent.
Yeah.
So that became my focal point for probably what ended up being 3 to 4 years. And so in pursuing that, I moved to the UK and I dived into the sports industry. So I worked at Wimbledon, I worked at Lord's Cricket Ground for the Ashes, and worked on a Rugby World Cup in 2015 as well.
Nice.
And eventually came back to Australia with this vision of becoming a sports agent. So that period of my career gave me some focus, I guess. Like I had a goal in mind. I had a dream job in mind.
Yeah.
Came back to Australia and worked at a business called TLA. It was called ESP at the time. It's one of Australia's biggest sports marketing agencies.
Yeah.
Was there for about 3 years. Really enjoyed the work there, but by that stage, by the time I kind of gotten into that position, I realized that becoming a sports agent probably wasn't either very likely for me and probably realistically wasn't something that I did actually want to do. It was more the idea of what I thought a sports agent was that had been driving me up to that point.
Yeah.
But that was all learning and like I had a lot of great experiences along the way. And as I said, that it had given me a focus for kind of that was driving a lot of my decisions and my work ethic and things like that, which I've come to realize now is that's a positive.
Yeah.
Even if it's not where you end up for life, having that kind of direction or having a goal can help you achieve a lot of things.
Yeah, definitely.
And yeah, kind of then I guess fast forwarding a little bit more towards today, went back into a government department for a couple of years around the birth of my first child, my daughter Ellie, and that was through COVID. So that ended up being quite a blessing because the sports industry severely impacted by COVID.
Yeah.
And again, realized that the kind of the government thing wasn't for me at the stage I was at in my life. So we, as a family, took a bit of a career break. My wife's French. And so we spent most of 2022 living in France for the birth of our son.
Awesome.
And that's where I, with a bit of time on my hands, started to essentially journal, really, write down some thoughts, and then eventually started sharing some of those thoughts on LinkedIn occasionally. Yeah. Started doing that more regularly, and you know, fast forward to here in 2024, and I've built what was a side hustle into now my full-time job and my own, I guess, solopreneur business.
Yeah,
writing for clients on LinkedIn. So yeah. Quite the journey.
Mm. I was literally just writing a post this morning following my most recent interview that literally says that around most, so many people carry around this insecurity that they've gone about their career the wrong way. Like they're happy with where they are, but they feel some sort of shame or embarrassment about the way that they got there. But then you hear everyone saying the same thing. And so, yeah, it is really interesting. So many people have this idea that they've gone about their career the wrong way, and myself included. Like I carried around a chip on my shoulder from all the times I copped it from my mates for not going through to year 12 and stuff and all of that. So, yeah, it's really interesting. I think more and more people are starting to realize that having a diverse pathway to where you want to get to is actually a strength in many ways. But yeah, really interesting that so many people are carrying around that this sort of sense of, oh, like I haven't gone about this the right way and everything else previously was wrong until I've found it right. But it's sort of like everything builds off one another to get you to where you are, and each becomes a strength that you have. And so that's a really cool part of what you've done. In terms of sports management, that's another interesting point because I interviewed Lisa Stockman. She's a personal stylist in Melbourne, and she actually started out in sports management. So it's funny how two people can start in one thing, and then you weave your way around, and then one ends up as a LinkedIn ghostwriter, one then ends up as a personal stylist. I think about the same with me and my brother. We did our apprenticeship together as cabinet makers, and now he works down on a salmon farm in Tassie as a scuba diver running one of the crews on a boat. And I'm working in career development and employment and stuff with the government. So, yeah, it's funny the twists and turns that we all take, because we're all individuals with we discover different things about ourselves and things like that. So
yeah. And I think one thing for me that I've started to realize is at any given moment, we can often get hung up on, you know, what's the right choice, what's the best next move and things like that. And I've realized that there's not necessarily a right choice and a wrong choice. It's really just, can you make a good decision based on the information that you've got, the options that you've got in front of you, and just be willing to accept that this probably won't be the forever thing it might be, but you know, it's just taking you on the next step in your journey, wherever that's going to take you over time.
And like you said around having a goal that might help drive you, like when you have, sometimes what I've sort of started doing is rather than focusing on the goal being a position or a title, making it a skill that I want to develop. And so that's like the job that I've taken is literally because I want to develop some specific skills and some different perspectives. And so that sort of drove the next career step rather than just always focusing on the title. It's sort of like, well, once you've got the title, like what's next? And that might not necessarily be the thing that fulfills you. If you're thinking about, and for someone it might be, I want to get to this title. For me, it's sort of going like, if I can build these skills, then that will put me in a position where the next step will unfold. And as I have a new skill, then I might identify a new pathway that I want to do or find a new way that I can have impact and things like that. So, yeah.
Well, I think it also depends on, like, your values over time change. And so for me, I've started to move away from the idea of a title or even an industry to more starting with what are my priorities in life and then kind of working back to build a job or a career that works with those. So like for us right now, as I mentioned, my wife's French. We're going to move back to France this year. That's something that we love to do and want our kids to be bilingual. And so starting with that as kind of the priority, you know, what can I do with the skills I've got and the contacts I've got that's going to allow us as a family to move and live in different places around the world, and working backwards from that.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And those things just shift over time, those priorities and those values that you've got. And so making decisions based on those is probably a good, I guess, compass to have.
Mm, yeah, absolutely. Do you speak French?
Yeah. So I studied it through high school,
which
kind of got a base layer of French, and then just through immersion, you know, on kind of annual holidays each year, and then living there for most of 2022, that really moved me to the point where, you know, I was starting to have dreams in French, and I realized I wasn't listening, thinking in English, and then translating and speaking French. I was actually just speaking
thinking French.
Yeah, I was sort of that thing kind of became quite seamless. So
yeah, that's cool.
And hearing we make an effort to speak it to our kids at home, even in Australia, just to prepare them for moving back over. So yeah, look, the French is pretty solid.
Nice, good job. I actually remember we had a French Quebec student, exchange student, when I was maybe in year 9 or 10. And I remember him coming to school really excited, and he comes running up and he's like, "Oh, I'm really excited. I had my first dream in English." And it was like my first time that I twigged that he's not thinking in English in his head. You know? And I was like, that was a funny moment to realize other people think in other languages. Actually, I do the same with like dogs.
Okay.
Like, I'm like, there are dogs in the world that know better German and better French than me.
Yeah, that's a good point. Actually, I never thought of that.
Anyway, so that's a massive sidetrack. really cool that you're able to then build that into your life and go back and forth and things. And you've obviously built a career that allows you to do that and stuff. So that sort of gets back to that values piece, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, and that's, you know, if I think again about what drove me when the goal was being a sports agent, I probably didn't have in my early 20s a really deep understanding of what my values were. It was more of a blank canvas. You know, I only had myself to worry about. I could kind of go wherever I wanted, do whatever I wanted. And so it was more a kind of a dreams-based thing in a way, more than kind of values and priorities. And that phase of life is super valuable because it can push you to all sorts of different things.
Mm.
And then kind of leaving the sports industry on the other end was really about, you know, no longer being able or wanting to travel all over the country and work weekends at big events. And, you know, as family life was starting, you know, that became the priority and the value. So
it depends
what stage you're at.
Mm. What would you say is your best highlight out of working in the sports industry? Did you get to meet someone, or was there some sort of highlight moment in that?
There's so many. You know, I was down on the pitch next to Messi for, you know, Argentina came out for a tour game that I was part of, you know, to being on the field at AFL grand finals a few years, State of Origin.
Yeah.
I think one of the highlights that really stood out for me is I went on a hot lap with Lounsey, Craig Lowndes.
Yeah, right.
I'd worked with Lounsey and the Triple Eight Racing team at the time through a bunch of different activations and campaigns, and really found myself in the world of supercars, which was not a sport that I'd ever followed at all.
Yeah.
But it's a very unique and really interesting beast once you kind of get inside it. And
Yeah,
having that experience with Lounsey, I mean, was exhilarating. Like, it gave me a real, I guess, feel for how elite they are and kind of how fast they go.
Yeah.
It was just a really cool moment for me, I guess, as part of my career, is almost a, you know, a cherry on the cake, I guess, for some of the work that I'd done.
Yeah, absolutely. Given that I'm someone that's come from Bathurst, that's right up there. Really cool. Which AFL grand finals did you get on the field for? Because that's my space.
Yeah. So I remember. So who did the Crows? Did the Crows lose to Richmond?
That's the year that they did the they were doing the power stance in their lineups before the matches. Yeah.
So I remember that one because I did the longest kick, like, which is that activation kicking across the river on.
I love that.
Final.
Yeah.
So I was there for that one. And then it would have been the year after that. I honestly can't remember. That's one of the things. Once you work in the industry,
it's
just another game.
Yeah.
I feel like there was one. No, it must not have been Collingwood.
The one AFL grand final I've been to was the 2010 draw.
Oh, okay. Wow.
Yeah. What was that like? So we were there for that. And the craziest thing of it was 101,000 people all dead silent. The siren went and it was just like everyone's just sort of murmuring, just like, what happens? Oh, they're coming back next week. Oh. Yeah. So
yeah, how quickly did that realize, like how many people in the crowd knew that rule? Or did they announce it at the game or?
I don't know. I think it was one of those things that you always sort of had a sense of understanding of it, well, from my perspective, but you never really thought much about it. And then the reality of it was just like, as it started to set in and the game was so intense and it was just like, and we were just there as neutral supporters. Like it was just an awesome game of footy. Mm. And then suddenly the siren goes and it sort of sinks in and you can just tell everyone's just sort of like in shock.
I can only imagine. Yeah. I lived in Melbourne that year, I think maybe. Definitely remember just, it comes up all the time, you know, is the rule, is it the right rule? You know, should there be overtime or something like that? But
yeah,
that's amazing.
The other reason that weekend is etched in my mind is because I came home from that weekend to the Fieries. Ambos had left and police were there and someone had, driving up the road, had crashed into the back of my ute that was parked on the road and pushed it right a car's length up over the curb. And it was up over the curb and the fire trucks are there and the lights are going off. The person had gone to hospital, wasn't injured, and no one was in the passenger seat that would have been severely injured if there were. And so I came home to that after, yeah. So that was, that's a very memorable weekend for me. Wow. But no one was harmed, so yes. That's okay. Alrighty, so we'll stop nerding out on AFL because everyone will tune out. I could keep going on it all day. So thinking about LinkedIn, so I was keen to, you know, get your thoughts and tips for people that might want to start engaging with LinkedIn more. But I thought where a good starting point might be is why someone should be considering LinkedIn.
Yeah, look, I think we've seen a shift in the job market, or maybe just an exacerbation of some of the realities of the job market lately, which is that you're much more likely to have a good chance if you know someone involved in recruiting for a position. And LinkedIn can be a really great tool to help you stand out as a candidate. So, you know, for me, I kind of discovered LinkedIn just through sheer overwhelm of trawling through job sites and, you know, updating cover letters and tweaking them and trying to personalize them and then just getting sick of it and just copy pasting the company name and hitting send because you sort of get stuck between like a volume game versus really trying to tailor what you're doing.
Yeah.
And having been on the other side and reviewing applications for roles, you know, when you've got 150 to go through that all look roughly the same, for me, just that as a process it feels very dated now. And I think, you know, there are certain organizations, maybe government or public sector organizations and larger corporates that may still be kind of running that way. But I just think LinkedIn can be a really interesting alternative for people to find an alternative way into the headspace of someone who's trying to make a decision about recruiting someone. And I think that's all you're trying to achieve is nestle your way into their headspace when they're trying to solve this problem of an empty seat that they've got to fill.
Yeah.
So I think LinkedIn's really powerful for that.
Yeah. And one of the other things, and I'll get you to speak to it, is around people using LinkedIn not for the purpose of just simply wanting to get a job like in that moment. How would you sort of speak to that someone's sort of like, oh, well, I've got a job and I'm happy in that job. Like what's LinkedIn mean to me?
Yeah, so there's a principle in marketing which is around, your brand is what people say about you when you're not in the room. And I think we all have a personal brand, whether we're actively curating it or we're not. And that goes, you know, to your how you show up in the office with colleagues potentially, or on Zooms, or, you know, just your day-to-day interactions in your job. Mm-hmm. All of those things, you will have a personal brand amongst your colleagues and with your boss. And you hopefully want that to be a positive thing, whether it's hardworking or diligent or, you know, whatever it might be. There will be a way that people who know you think and talk about you when you're not there.
Yeah.
And that's your personal brand. And so for me, I see LinkedIn as an opportunity, and it's not for everyone necessarily, and it's not a mandatory, but it's an opportunity you've got to continue curating that personal brand away from your day-to-day job. And that can be either to reinforce your brand with, you know, within your company with maybe a more senior stakeholder that doesn't know you very well, or it might be to keep opportunities open, you know, for that next step down the line when you're thinking about moving. But as I say, you know, we all have a personal brand. I believe that. And LinkedIn is just a simple avenue that you could use to start curating that more intentionally if you want to.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. Absolutely agree. Okay. So let's say we've won people over and they're like, all right, I want to get active on LinkedIn. What are some of the practical ways that someone could sort of make a start on that? Because that can be quite the overwhelming part is I want to, but where do I start?
Yeah, absolutely. So for me, it's all about baby steps, I think. And the best first baby step you can take is something as simple as commenting on someone else's post. So my first advice would be don't think you've got to sit down and write the perfect LinkedIn post that it's going to be viewed tens of thousands of times and go around the globe. You know, that won't happen. So if you're feeling a little bit, overwhelmed, you know, you want to show up proactively in some way, but you're not really sure where to start, a great way is to use inspiration from the posts that you're seeing in the feed. And if you see a post from someone that's relevant, that's interesting to you, just start with a super simple comment. Could even be, like, the simplest is just a really specific compliment on why you liked that post. So, you know, you might be someone who likes the odd post on LinkedIn. If you find yourself doing that, why not take the 10 seconds extra and just think through a very short comment that you could leave as a compliment to the poster to explain why you liked it.
Yeah.
You know, the next step from there might be share your own perspective or build your own opinion onto what they've said. And that's just a really simple way to start, I guess, popping up, start getting comfortable with the idea that other people out there are going to see your words and your thoughts online.
Yeah.
Because I talk a lot about FOPO, the fear of posting online, and I think we all face that, especially early on in the journey. So commenting, you know, in a thoughtful way is a really good icebreaker or that first baby step to get started.
Yeah. Nice. And probably even one of the things it would be, who should people be considering connecting with and following if they're getting on?
Yeah, this is an interesting one. So I think you can either look at the really big, there's some big influencers out there with multiple hundreds of thousands of followers. I personally don't get a huge amount of, I guess, engagement or interest from a lot of that content, because I think the reality of building a huge following like that is you have to sort of genericize your content a little bit. So because you have a big audience across a wide spectrum of people, so you don't necessarily want to alienate anyone. So, you know, for me, it could be if you've been to an industry event recently and someone spoke or presented on stage, can you find them on LinkedIn and see if they're active? You know, you might be connecting with them with a message that references where you saw them, that thing that you have in common, the event that you saw them at, that kind of thing. Otherwise, you can search by your kind of industry or your interest and see what posts and results come up from that.
Yeah.
And other than that, I would suggest connecting with people that you know in some way. Like it might be a connection of a connection, but I personally don't do a lot of kind of cold you know, mass connecting with random people. I don't think that's the most effective way to use LinkedIn.
Yeah. Because so I wasn't very active on LinkedIn until I finished my last role and I was getting ready to move town. And that's when I sort of realized, oh, I need to get intentional about connecting with people, because everything, like the town I was working, like I've grown up there, like, you know, oh, I want to try and get established in this school because I was delivering some programs that worked with school age people. Oh, the principal used to be my footy coach, you know, like, so yeah. Like you sort of had a built-in network. Whereas then getting ready to move to a larger city in Newcastle and sort of realizing, oh, I don't want to fall into a black hole of not knowing anyone and stuff. So I got really active on LinkedIn and started connecting. And so then I wanted to start this podcast and stuff. So I was trying to think through who could I engage with and stuff. And so I did do quite a focus on engaging with like recruiters and other sort of career coaches and things like that, just to kind of establish myself, I guess, within the ecosystem, I guess you could call it, of people that are sort of doing a similar thing. Because that all sort of feeds into who's coming up in your feed, right? And so getting like-minded people in your feed so you can sort of be contributing to what they're doing and finding your feet. And you're also then learning from one another, like you're seeing the different type of content that's, you know, resonating with people, and it might sort of help inform you, and you learn bits and pieces from each other. So that was one area, I guess, where it was sort of generic, but sort of not, because you're sort of trying to focus within industries relevant to you and stuff. But one of the things I have thought about is obviously the content that I'm creating, though, the target audience is, you know, some of them might be looking to progress their career or looking to change careers and things like that. And that's a bit harder to, you know, go out and sort of find yourself. It's more so being available, ready for hopefully they can find you.
Yeah, and I think that's the aspect of, in marketing, we talk about push tactics and pull tactics, and I think creating content is really all about the pull. You know, eventually you showing up consistently, helping people guide their careers, you know, that will pull people towards you. There's a bit of push that you need to do. Like you said, if you're moving to a new place or you're trying to move into a new industry, you know, you want to do some proactive kind of outreach and connecting to people. But then if you do get to a point where you're creating content, that's all about the pull and talking really specifically to the audience that you're trying to reach.
Yeah, nice. That's a good little sort of framework to think about that.
And I think just on the push kind of side of things, really quickly, like if there's an industry figure, someone that you would love to, you know, get some mentoring from or just meet or hear from, I think when you, like, there's a human sitting on the other end of that connection request, and these people can feel quite intimidating or scary based on their title or, you know, who you think they are. But I think if you reach out to them with a genuine short message about why you're interested in connecting to them, that's a pretty good recipe for success. You know, you want to be genuine, you want to be authentic about your kind of reasons for reaching out.
Yeah.
And if you do that, most people will realize, again, there's a human on the other side and are often happy to help people on a similar path somewhere behind them.
Yeah, absolutely. I enjoyed your post actually this week about the pitch slap.
Oh yeah, don't be doing that.
And not this slapping people in the face with a hard sell and you don't even know who they are.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, steer clear of the pitch slap. But if you've got a genuine reason that you and if you haven't asked to make, like if it is around mentoring or I'm interested in breaking into XYZ, making that ask, you know, in an authentic way, I think is fine.
Yeah, absolutely. A prime example is the person that connected us to one another, which is Kim Curtin. And I sort of, I'd been listening to her podcast for a while. And then when I got on LinkedIn, and then I was like, oh, she's probably on LinkedIn. So I got on and found her there. And they sort of reached out to her and said, like, hey, I'm thinking about starting my own podcast. Like, you know, what would be your thoughts? Or, you know, is there anything, you know, you learnt when you first started out or something like that? And she's, you know, really generous at the time, came back with, you know, some really genuine tips and advice and stuff and wished me well. And then, so then later on, sort of once I'd sort of got up and going, like reached out, like, hey, like, would you be interested in being a guest? And she obliged and stuff. So, yeah, there's definitely ways that you can do it that's authentic, and you're not just, yeah, going for the jugular.
Absolutely. Yeah. Couldn't agree more.
Yeah. Would there be any other tips that you'd give to someone that's sort of wanting to get more active, or maybe someone that's, okay, they post here and there, but what would be the next step for them in their intentional progression?
Yeah. Look, I think it does depend on your objective. So, you know, if you're trying to do some digging and figure out what the next career move might be, that may be more behind the scenes. That might be more one-on-one connections and outreach to try and understand, you know, where opportunities might be.
Yeah.
I think if you're trying to curate your personal brand and position yourself as more of an authority in the space that you're in, a framework that a lot of people might be familiar with that can help with how you create content is the STAR framework for interviews, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you might just think about a scenario, like a STAR-based scenario that you have used in interviews in the past.
Yeah.
And you could actually outline that as a post, for example.
Yeah. So do a written post sort of outlining a situation, the tasks you did, actions you took and the results. Is that right? Did I get it?
Yeah. Or CARS, you know, the challenge, the actions, the results, and then what was the strategic kind of insight from that. So
yeah,
I'm a big believer in taking inspiration from stuff you're already doing. It might be a meeting that you have or a report that you write, the interview that you sit down with, use those kind of nuggets as and just document, you know, what happened.
Yeah.
And those can be quite good ammunition for content.
Mm.
And then see what kind of sticks with your audience.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And so for you as a ghostwriter, what are the sort of skills that you've needed to develop to be able to operate well in that, and then how would you be able to support someone if they're sort of looking to engage you for LinkedIn?
So for me, the skills that I have, I find myself with a bit of imposter syndrome trying to figure out what they actually are sometimes. Look, I think it's really the key part of my process is sitting down to interview the client, asking good questions, creating a safe space for them to share as much as they can about what they know. And then I guess the skill that I bring is understanding the platform of LinkedIn and the nuances and the attention spans and some of the norms and nuances around how content works on LinkedIn.
Yeah.
And applying that to stories to really build them up and make them super digestible, kind of engaging, and ideally teach something at the end as well. So that, to be honest, comes with a lot of ruthless editing, you know, thinking really, really harshly almost about a story or a situation that someone's told me about, and what's the meat, you know, what's the really important part of this, and what's the other stuff that needs to go.
Yeah.
And just being kind of ruthless with that, and actually being a fresh set of eyes on it is helpful because it's not my story.
Definitely.
So I think that's part of it. A lot of it is around listening and developing relevant questions. I think for me too, having had a pretty diverse set of jobs and different paths on my career, I can get up to speed relatively quickly with the subject matter that clients are talking to me about,
which
helps me to, again, probe a bit deeper and ask interesting questions.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that's really what it boils down to for me.
Yeah, curiosity is a skill in terms of being able to actually use it to your advantage and someone else's advantage. So I definitely think curiosity would be one of those key skills there for you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's really good. And the whole thing, one of the things that we've been using as like a bit of a framing question for ourselves, like in our reporting and stuff at work, is the question of so what? So it's like, all right, you've put something in your report. so what? Like, not in the critical sense, but in the what does this mean to anyone? Like, how is this relevant? How is this adding value to the reader and stuff? And that can be a really good framework for you've written down something and then looking and going, all right, so what? So, you know, what does this mean to someone? Is this supporting someone? Is this building someone up? Is this helping someone solve a problem that they have? Or, you know, whatever it might be that's the goal behind your content, is it actually doing that?
Yeah. Well, and I think kind of leading into that and building off that, I try and think about if you're creating something, how do you make it easy on the brain, particularly for LinkedIn? If you're talking to a corporate or professional audience, you know, we're buried in corporate speak all the time, unnecessary kind of jargon and more complex language than we need. So if you're wanting to stand out on LinkedIn and with the thoughts that you're sharing, the more simple you can frame them up, the more simple the language you can use, just make it easy on the brain, because a lot of the people that are engaging with your content will either be, you know, a meeting's finished 6 minutes early and they're having a quick scroll, or to be honest, they're on the toilet or they're on the train. You know, the headspace is small. And so to get a message that cuts through, it's absolutely about the so what, you know, what does someone reading need to know about this? And then how do you make it really easy on their brain so that it actually goes in rather than just turning into another set of dots on the corporate speak that we're all, you know, bombarded with in a professional sense every day.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Well, that's really good. So, Joe, if someone wanted to get in touch with you, how can they find you?
Yeah, find me on Instagram. No, I'm just kidding. I'm on LinkedIn more than I care to admit. So, yeah, find me on LinkedIn. I'm Joe Mackay. If you search Ghostwriter, you'll probably find me. Absolutely, always happy to chat to people who are suffering from FOPO. You know, that fear of posting online. If you're nervous about where to start, I've got a bunch of resources and playbooks and lessons that I share along the way. So, if you find my LinkedIn page and want to send me a message or just follow along, be more than happy to help anyone listening with their journey.
Awesome. And I'll put all of that into the show notes and stuff for people to find you. And thanks heaps. This has been a really awesome conversation.
Great. Thank you for having me, Alex. Good to chat with you.
Thanks so much for joining me today. Be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode. And let's connect on LinkedIn so that we can keep the conversation going. Or head to my website and download my free resource, The Career Building Principles. Bye for now.